Welcome to the Urology Coding and Reimbursement Podcast, where we help urologists and staff achieve peak economic and practice efficiency so there is time and energy to focus on patient care and a happy life. I'm your host, Scott Painter, with my co-hosts, Mark Painter and Dr. Ray Painter.
Today's episode is brought to you by ModMed. Do your EHR and PM adapt to your style of practice? The ModMed EHR and PM do, with benefits like remembering preferences and automatically suggesting documentation and billing codes. Urologists voted ModMed the number one urology-specific EHR and PM solution available, built by urologists with input from yours truly. Stop wasting 60 minutes and 200 for each of your open or no-show slot. Go to modmed.com/PRSnetwork. Set up an appointment with the team at ModMed Urology and shift your urology practice into high gear. Imagine a solution on a tablet or the web that works seamlessly with revenue cycle management, analytics, telehealth, payment processing, patient engagement tools, and much more. ModMed is transforming healthcare by placing doctors and patients at the center of care.
Welcome to episode 145 of the Urology Coding and Reimbursement Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Painter, with my co-hosts, Mark Painter and Dr. Ray Painter. And on this episode, we wanted to answer a few questions that came into our community. That's the Urology Coding and Reimbursement group. You can visit the episode page and join the group and see what questions are being asked. So if you go to PRSnetwork.com/145 for episode 145. There's a link to join that group and check out these questions and the answers. All right. First, we wanted to talk about modifier 78 and a question that Dr. John Lynn asked on a recent, a MAC call with Noridian. And on the Thriving Urology Practice Facebook group that Dr. Lynn hosts, he put up a recording of a call where he asked about modifier 78. And for those of you who don't remember the numbers, modifier 78 is an unplanned return to the OR, and so for a complication. And that is... the question that John asked is, can modifier 78 be applied to a procedure performed in a procedure room in the office, which would be place of service 11? So, and the Noridian answer was, no, you can't do that. That the computer won't accept place of service 11, even though, you know, CMS documentation states that that's acceptable. So, Mark, you want to chime in and share kind of what our experience is and what's going on out there?
Certainly. So first up, it's interesting the answer that John got from the person from Noridian. And then there's a couple of things that really kind of show us where Noridian might be missing everything, and certainly where the answer was incorrect. But let's start with the definition of modifier 78. So in CPT, modifier 78 says it is an unplanned return to the operating/procedure room by the same physician or other qualified health care professional following the initial procedure for a related procedure during the postoperative period. And then they go on to say it may be necessary to indicate that another procedure was performed during the postoperative period of the initial procedure, unplanned procedure following initial procedure, when the procedure is related to the first and requires the use of an operating/procedure room. It may be reported by adding modifier 78 to the related procedure. So clearly the response that John got was that it was an operating room, but didn't really expand on the procedure room. issue. And then second, we can always go to the Medicare internet only manual, to the carrier's manual, and find out definitions of what a global surgery package is and what it includes and what it does not include. And this is in chapter 12, paragraph 40.1.B, services not included in the global surgery package, surgical package, which states the treatment for postoperative complications, which requires a return trip to the operating room, parentheses OR. An OR for this purpose is defined as a place of service specifically equipped and staffed for the sole purpose of performing procedures. The term includes a cardiac catheterization suite, a laser suite, and an endoscopy suite. It does not include a patient's room, a minor treatment room, a recovery room, or an intensive care unit, unless the patient's condition was so critical there would be insufficient time for transportation to an OR. So right there, we've got two very clear indications that there is not, as the person from Noridian implied, a restriction within the system that would say you could not use a place of service 11, meaning in the office. So 11's in the office, and so you could have a qualified endoscopy suite that was staffed for the sole purpose of performing procedures for that period of time. So she was not totally up on what the full regulations are and the directives to the MACs. But it is interesting, if you go a little bit further and look at the MAC websites, Noridian's definition or example fact sheet for modifier 78, and you can look this up, does actually say returned OR. It's a very short description, and in my opinion, pretty poor in the way that it describes everything. But if you check some of your other MACs who have actually paid attention to the directive given to them by Medicare, who is paying them to administer their program, you will find much better and full descriptions of the appropriate uses of modifier 78. And the best one I found is Palmetto. So if you want to look at the Palmetto website, they've got some really good detailed descriptions of what I'm going to call just the complication modifier, modifier 78, and when it can be used. And it does, you know, specifically state, as the internet only manual does, that it could be a catheterization, a laser suite, or an endoscopy suite, but not a minor treatment room. It's got to be an actual staffed procedure room and equipped procedure room when that service is provided. It also goes on to tell you, as does, if you look in further to how those services are paid, which was another question John asked, it does pay the intraoperative portion only for those procedures which have a 10 or 90 day global. Now, I've often in my presentation shortened this to work value only, which is a reasonably accurate approximation, but not actually the full definition. So if we look at that full definition, that would say that a procedure, when you append that complication modifier 78, will pay the intraoperative portion only percentage for those procedures which have a 10 or a 90 day global, but with modifier, the complication modifier and the 78 on a 0 day global, Medicare is supposed to pay the full amount due because there is no intraoperative percentage for those particular services. So I'm going to start changing the way I talk about this on the reimbursement side moving forward. But it's so to give a little bit more clarity there. It's interesting that, driving off of one Medicare MAC website versus another, and we found this to be true also with, kind of the MACs keeping up with telehealth and some of the rule changes that are out there, that it is something that you may want to dig a little deeper than just your payer's website when they're regurgitating rules, or just your MAC's website. Obviously, when it comes to NCDs and LCDs, your MAC has a little bit more direct adjudication there, as long as they're not in conflict with a national coverage decision or a national coverage article. But the directives within the internet-only manual, those are contractually binding on the payers that they need to follow. So those I tend to look a little bit broader, and I do find other explanations out there and other interpretations relative to these websites. And if they're good, as is Palmetto's, and actually Novitas is pretty good as well, you will also find typically at the bottom of the page links that will direct you to information where this where that they use to develop these guidelines. And Noridian's does have the same link to the internet only manual, but it doesn't have some of the other links and doesn't summarize it as well as some of the other groups. So it's always interesting to see how those employees of the MACs truly look at how they're supposed to deal with Medicare rules and regulations. But it also is very helpful to truly understand where those regulations are coming from and what the directives from Medicare really are if you run into trouble. And then I will tell you that even in Noridian's system, as we have a number of our RCM clients that do bill Noridian for services, that we are successfully billing and being paid for complications billed with modifier 78 with a place of service 11 or office. So there have been a few people that sound like they're a bit misinformed, but understandably, if they're looking at the website, that's where they are. They didn't go any deeper, and that's an ultimate faux pas, I would say.
Ray, thoughts?
Well, you just have to go dig in until you find the final answer, because we find that not everybody at the payer level is informed or gives you the right answer. So if you know what the right answer is, keep after them.
All right. Okay. Let's move on to the questions. So we have a question that came into the community from Angie, and Angie asked about a robot-assisted laparoscopic evaluation of the left distal ureter. How would you code this? And the question was is it the 50949? And she said, thank you. So the 50949, I can say, is incorrect. But Mark, you want to tell what the correct code is and why?
Oh, I will. But tell them what the definition of 50949 is.
All right. So the 50949, unlisted laparoscopic procedure, ureter.
So Angie, first, reasonable assumption, because we're talking about the ureter and we have emphasized with all of you how focused CPT through the AMA and Medicare are relative to approach and your destination. You know, so looking at laparoscopy and ureter is a great way to start as you go through this. But I can tell you a couple of things that, you know, before we started down the road of trying to find the right code, you know, one of the things that we were asking is, and as a coder trying to bill things, you kind of want to know when something doesn't just smell right. And it, you know, certainly doesn't smell right or isn't very common that you would hook up a robot and do just an exploration. So there was probably in this circumstance, at least I would assume, and I would want to ask those questions, something else that they were trying to do or going to do, and that's why they used a robot. Now I may be wrong, but certainly, you know, using a robot just to do an exploratory service, you know, isn't something that I've seen very frequently. So that would cause me to call for a timeout and pull some documentation, look a little deeper, and maybe ask some questions of my physician as to what was going on fully. Give me the whole picture, not just this end game. So that would be my first step in working with this particular situation. Then the second thing is, if I did find out that all they did was an exploration, now I'm thinking broader than just ureter. So yeah, they were looking at the ureter, they were thinking about something with the ureter. But in this case, if all you did was an exploration, maybe they went down, they were going to potentially do some type of ureterectomy or a lysis to do maybe a ureterostomy to try and do a cross to the other side, something along those lines, and they got in there and decided not to for whatever reason, and all they did was an exploration, then I'm actually going to drop up to the broader exploration codes. And the code that I would use, if in fact all they did was an exploration, would be a 49320, which is a laparoscopy, abdomen, peritoneum, and omentum diagnostic with or without collection of specimens by brushing or washing, which is a separate procedure. So I would encourage Angie, I would encourage some more questions to find out what's the story behind this issue, because there may be something else that's there. But if in fact that's what they ended up doing, then I would recommend the 49320.
Ray, thoughts on that?
Mark, was that a laparoscopy code?
Yes.
Okay. I didn't hear that in the definition. Then I have nothing to add.
Okay. Yeah, the first word was laparoscopy. Maybe I blew through it too quick in the description.
All right. Okay. Let's go on to the next question. This is a question that came in from Riley. Riley says, hello, we have a question regarding ADT injections/visits. For Eligard injections and Camsevi injections. We have recently hired an experienced NP to launch an advanced prostate clinic. For our patients on ADT therapy, can they be seen by our NPs and bill a level 3 or 4 office visit, as she will be discussing bone health, sexual health, and incontinence issues? What are other clinics doing nationwide for this type of visit, and what's appropriate? /recommended, please let me know if there's any additional information I can provide. All right. Mark, I'll turn it over to you.
Yeah, we did see the clarification from Riley. To clarify, this would be an E&M and therapeutic injection in the same visit. So Riley, you know, an NP is not restricted or prohibited from using a modifier 25. As we know, the APPs, over the past several years have gotten expanded as to what they can and can't do relative to Medicare. And certainly states are expanding the licensure of your folks that are mid-levels as they go forward. So the first thing that you have to check is that by state licensing, and I would tell you that in virtually all states, a nurse practitioner can provide an E&M visit and can perform injections for patients. So now we're dropping back up to what are the regulations that apply, and those regulations that apply would be the definition of modifier 25. And as well as your definitions for injections and for E&M codes as to what you would charge. So it sounds like the NP for some of your ADT injection visits, and I would say some, would be providing services that would be considered significant and separately identifiable, meaning it's medically necessary. It does require effort above and beyond just making sure that the patient is the right patient, is capable and has tolerated the drug and has agreed to the ADT therapy. So separately identifiable, so it needs to be documented correctly. So the short answer is yes, that can be done. The longer answer is yes, under certain circumstances and with the appropriate documentation and the appropriate circumstances based on the patient's presentation, an E&M visit as a 3 or a 4, depending on what's documented during that visit, can be reported with a 25 modifier with those ADT injections and the ADT under the J code as well. So again, it's all documentation driven and it's all circumstance driven, but it is allowed. And of course, we've focused a lot on modifier 25 recently with Cigna's new changes and everything that's going on. So you want to make sure you double check and train your NP well to understand when it's appropriate and to document and use the electronic medical record appropriately to support the work that was done that was medically necessary.
Ray, your thoughts?
I just want to emphasize what Mark mentioned a couple of times. You want to be sure not only that it documents significant and separately identifiable, but you want to be sure that that discussion was medically necessary. And certainly a discussion on bone health and all of that is worthwhile initially, but it probably would not be appropriate every 3 months. So you want to be sure that every E&M that is charged is medically necessary as well as qualifying for the 25 modifier.
All right. Okay, let's go to the final question that we wanted to answer on the podcast on this episode. It's from Joanna, and Joanna asked, is there a CPT code for removal of a urethral stone using forceps with no cysto involved? Every code I see is for cysto with removal. Can they bill a 52310 with a 52 for reduced services, or should it be billed as the unlisted code? All right, Mark, why is this question being asked?
Well, I mean, as you poke around in looking for CPT codes, there is not a good code, or there is not a code for a simple blind removal of a foreign body from the urethra. So I think that's why the code is, or the question is being asked. So it's definitely unfortunate, but true that we've got to look elsewhere to see how we would report the service she's describing, which is we're not using a cystoscope, but we are removing a foreign body from the urethra. There's nothing good that's there. So that leaves us to what's our next move. I think we've got two options here. One would be our 52310, and the 52310, which is our typically used for stent removal. Is by definition a cystourethroscopy with removal of foreign body calculus or ureteral stent from urethra or bladder, separate procedure, simple. So if we could take off cystourethroscopy, we've got the perfect code, but we don't. So in that case, the potential of using a 52 modifier on the 52310, I do think is appropriate here, because we are, the essence of the procedure itself is the removal of foreign body calculus or urethral stent from the urethra or bladder, which is what we're doing. So 52310 with a dash 52. And then, but know that that's, again, you're basically using the 52 to change the definition to take out the cystourethroscopy. So the other option, I think as suggested, would be to use the unlisted code, the 53899, which would, and then index it back to a reduced 52310. So I think you've got two things, two options there, neither of them exact. But both perfectly legitimate.
All right, Ray, your thoughts?
Nothing to add.
Okay. All right, well, let's wrap this episode up here, and we'll go around the horn, get some final thoughts, and we'll close this out. Mark, we talked a lot about modifiers today, just the questions that keep coming in. Definitely had a lot of modifier usage. What are your final thoughts on this episode?
Well, so number one, I want to know, does Ray have a duck in his office? Because that squeaking sound is is interesting as he's moving around. But I'm assuming he's moving his microphone around, and it's he needs some WD-40 on that thing.
yes.
But
secondly, I bet you're right. And I'm my apologies to all for the squeak.
back to modifiers. We've had a lot of focus on modifiers recently. The reason we've had a lot of these, I think there's several reasons. So number one, and this one I appreciate most of all, is I think everybody's getting better and better at the basics, and we're now focusing on questions that kind of fall outside the easy stuff, if you will. We're looking at odd circumstances and things that occur maybe a little less frequently, and that's really where we hit in that modifier territory, that 80, 85, even some cases 90% of what you do in the physician office is in the OR are repetitive use of codes, and the documentation is well known and well understood. So, when you're talking about modifiers, you are talking about some of those odd birds that, that fit in that 10% of your cases. So I think that's one thing that's out there. And again, that bodes well for the fact that everybody's maybe doing their basics correctly. The other thing I think that's there, that's kind of driving some of these questions is, man, the payers are being very nitpicky and, you know, going through and interpreting word by word for word and, you know, tearing apart CPT definitions, you know, has really, I think, been on the rise across the board. And, you know, having arguments with payers or pushing things through with supporting documentation as payers look past that first level and are trying to ratchet down or ratchet down the payments and ratchet up the hassle factor has been a tough one, and really increased, I think, the amount of work we have to do in making sure that the payers are following their own rules that are published to the letter. And it's becoming almost a legal game of interpreting everything. So we'll have to keep going on this and really keep pushing. And then, of course, the last piece that's out there is, man, with increased costs and decreasing reimbursements from Medicare and all of the pressures in providing healthcare in the U.S. today, man, we have to fight for every penny to make sure that we're continuing to cover our overhead and keep our take-home pay. So I don't expect this to get better. In fact, I expect it to continue to be an issue that we will fight and have to claw for the little things.
Ray, how about your final thoughts?
Totally agree. As some of you know, we've been following closely what's happening for the last 30 years, and it's gotten increasingly more detailed, and I think it will in the future. So we have to increase our job of becoming more sophisticated on the provider side. We'll continue to try to do our part. You do yours. Keep those questions coming.
All right. Okay. And I will remind you that if you haven't joined the urology coding and reimbursement group, and this is where the questions you can ask, it's a free group to join. You can go to prsnetwork.com/145 for the episode 145 of this the podcast. And on the episode page, you will find a link to join the group. So we do encourage you to get on there and help out and answer some questions if you can as well. There's a lot of questions out there that we try and get to as many as we can. And anybody that can help out, we do appreciate if you the group answering questions as well. So we'll answer as many as we can, though. All right. We'll end this here. Again, we'd like to thank ModMed and encourage you to check out their practice management and EHR healthcare solutions. Go to modmed.com/PRS network for a special offer for our podcast listeners. And I will also remind you, and we'll put a link in the episode page as well, registration for the Urology Advanced Coding and Reimbursement Seminar is open, so you can get the special early bird pricing. Also, we'll put a link to, we'll put a special code in the episode page that you can use that that will give you a discount for the seminar. So we do appreciate you listening. All right, that's all we got. Take us out, Ray.
Happy coding.
Thank you for listening to the Urology Coding and Reimbursement Podcast, where we help urologists and their staff maximize income and efficiencies so there's time and energy for patient care and a happy life. Special thanks to Carl Painter for the music today. You can find his music on Spotify under his record label, The Juicery.